resume the hearing. Mr. Milne, are you out there?
Yes.
I am indeed. Good afternoon.
Welcome to the hearing. Ms. Stephen is waiting with eager anticipation for your contribution, as are we.
Fantastic.
So we have your summary statement. Thank you for that. And thank you for providing the additional visuals as I requested and going further and giving us a complete understanding of that particular viewpoint. So perhaps if you care to present your summary.
Thank you very much. Perhaps I'll skip one to, I'll start at three. I've tabled an A3 document titled CCCL-GIZ here in further exhibits. This contains zone photo overlays, as we've just mentioned and as was requested. It also contains an updated structure plan and additional CTV mapping in response to Matthew Jones' second rebuttal evidence. I can talk through that perhaps at the end of my reading my evidence summary.
Certainly.
And obviously, I imagine in response to the questions. The application site is partly zoned at rural with an overlay of ONL and designation 76, the landfill buffer, partly Gibson character zone, and is located outside an ONL. The localised receiving environment for the site is Victoria Flats. The values of the ONL are primarily associated with the surrounding mountainous landforms, which contribute to high natural character, landscape and amenity values. On the flats, a rural character exists due to a dominance of open space and low density of built form. Land use across Victoria Flats has intensified since establishment of the QLD landfill and now includes industrial and recreational activities. Mitigation treatments for these activities include bunding, planting along the highway corridor, and shoulder belt planting. These human interventions have allowed significant modification to occur that have reduced the naturalness and openness of the river terrace. The application site is relatively flat and open, has a rural character, exhibits human modifications and a pastoral land use. Landscape and amenity values are largely associated with the broad-scale landforms which surround Victoria Flats. Amenity values are reduced in proximity to adjacent land uses, particularly the QLD landfill. The south part of the site is contained by a localised basin landscape and has a somewhat limited visual influence. Analysis of the site's attributes and modifications, a ZTV study, and an assessment of the site's landscape sensitivity have been undertaken. This analysis has informed the proposed structure plan in which the proposed developable slash activity areas are in areas of low landscape sensitivity and lower visual influence. These are considered to be appropriate locations for potential future development. I consider it as essential that the structure plan areas are paired with provisions regarding mitigation planting, setbacks, building height, building coverage, and building form, material, and colours to ensure effects on landscape and visual amenity are acceptable and the rural industrial character prevails. In the context of landscape effects on the ONL, I consider that the application site has capacity to absorb a degree of development as both the site and the river terrace are modified and portray values which clearly differ from the values of the ONL. I consider effects on the landscape values of the ONL will be in the range of moderate to low. In the context of visual amenity effects, I consider a paired back rather than generic version of the GIZ as proposed does not necessarily equate to an urban form. The proposed structure plan displays an appropriate response to the site and paired with appropriate provisions will ensure that the rural industrial character that will result from the development of the zone is not urban in character because of its scale, intensity, visual character and dominance of built structures. Now I'll just turn my attention to landscape matters raised in Mr. Jones' second rebuttal. Mr. Jones remains opposed to the rezoning relief sought while he states that he generally concurs with attributes and values outlined in my evidence in chief. He references the following points of his disagreement. At 5.8, Mr. Jones considers the presence of shoulder belts, buns and mitigation planting to be overstated. I do not consider this to be the case as buns located along the highway corridor have been implemented adjacent to multiple recent developments and have reduced the sense of openness and naturalness experienced by users of the highway corridor. At 5.10, Mr. Jones describes the qualities of the site in its own right, including the open nature of the terraced flats. I've described the site in a similar way in my evidence in chief, and do not consider the openness of the flats to contribute to the amenity of Victoria Flats. At 5.11, Mr. Jones considers the effects on amenity from the adjacent land users have been overstated. I do not consider this to be the case. Though the landfill inquiry activities themselves are not visible, the bunding along the highway corridor and shelter belt at the landfill boundary are obvious modifications in the landscape. At 5.12, Mr. Jones considers the visibility of the site has been underplayed and describes the north site and eastern reaches of the south site as being visible for long stretches along State Highway 6. I disagree. Referring to the ZTV analysis on sheet 20, I consider the views of the site intermittent and the visible area of the site changes as one traverses Victoria Flats from the intersection of Victoria Flats Road around the bend of the Oxbow of the river. At 5.13, Mr. Jones states that he considers the measurement threshold for the site to be against whether the future development will protect the landscape values of the ONL. I concur with the statement to the extent that part of the CCCL site is within an ONL and clarify that I have not implied that a pristine natural landscape is the threshold. However, when assessing landscape sensitivity, an understanding of existing patterns in development and modifications is necessary to determine the appropriateness of future development and thus how it will affect landscape values. At 5.14, Mr. Jones refers to the constraints identified in paragraph 16 from the evidence in chief. While identified as constraints, I've provided assessment of these points in C, D, and E in the matters raised section of my EIC. At 5.16, Mr. Jones describes the proposal as allowing for large-scale changes and new and uncharacteristic features to occur in the landscape. He also considers the GIZ to be an urban form of development. I do not consider this to necessarily be true, as additional provisions regarding scale, form, density, and materials slash colour are proposed to ensure development is appropriate within the rural context. At 5.18 to 5.22, Mr. Jones describes the building heights in conjunction with an 80% site coverage provision will result in the introduction of an inappropriate built form and scale. I certainly concur with his assessment and consider that the provisions now provided regarding form coverage, materials cover, setbacks and mitigation planting will ensure an outcome which is palatable within the context. At 5.23, Mr. Jones questions as to whether the ZTV analysis is to respective ground level. We had undertaken a ZTV analysis for ground level, sheet 20 of my original graphic attachment, and we have now undertaken it for 6 metres and 10 metres in relation to views of the south side. These layers of analysis were used to inform the location of the zones on the structure plan. 2 new exhibits have been appended demonstrating the 6 and 10 metre ZTV studies. These further studies demonstrate that only some of the proposed developable activity areas will be visible, and paired with the planted amenity setbacks and further provisions, I consider that the site will be able to absorb the scale of development proposed. In conclusion, I can understand the concern around allowing a generic GIZ zoning that allows a high level of development potential with limited design controls and one that is quite stark difference from the existing and adjacent character. However, the quality of the environment contained on the site is somewhat overlooked due to the backdrop. Therefore, there is plenty of opportunity for enhancement that is enabled through development. A GIZ with a more tailored set of provisions in combination with a structure plan would ensure an outcome palatable in the context of ONL and GCZ, where landscape and visual effects are contained within this rural setting. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. We've heard from Mr. Giddens this morning, and one of the things he told us was amended site coverages. And you said at your paragraph 18 of your summary, additional provisions regarding scale, form, density, colours, material are proposed to ensure development is appropriate within a rural context. that's not necessarily the same thing as saying it's not urban. And I also note that one of the development areas retains an 80% building coverage. So can you explain to me, if you don't think it's urban, if you think this is rural, why it is?
Yes, indeed. Yes, you did write. Activity Area 3 is proposed to have an 80% building coverage as compared to Activity Area 2 and 1. 2 is 50% and 1 is 25%. I believe that building coverage on a whole across the zoning proposed, or the area proposed for the zoning, combined with the building materials pallet and controls around that, combined with the height, I believe that in combination would present a built form that is still relatively subservient to the surrounding rural character of the flats and the site in the whole. And when you also combine that with the planting mitigation setbacks and the like, I am of the opinion that there is still plenty of sort of open landscape that will run through and permeate the zone as compared to say if the zone was a completely 75 or 80% site coverage.
And looking at Area 3, how big is that in hectares?
Area 3 is roughly 13.6 hectares, and Area 2 is 23, and Area 1 is 8.4.
Can you just run through those again, please?
For sure. Area 3 is 13.6, Area 2 is 23, and Area 1 is 8.4.
And those are all the southern areas, because one of
that's in combination. So Area 1 and Area 2 combine both northern and southern. And sorry, I don't just have at my fingertips the breakdown between the north and southern for Area 1 and 2.
So the answer is Area 2 and 1, those numbers are both north and south.
Correct.
In your description and your evidence, at paragraph 47, you say you consider that Area 1 has low landscape sensitivity, not highly visible. Areas 2 to 4 are more visible. One of the policies in Chapter 6 imports a test from the ODP of not being, of being reasonably difficult to see, which is a different focus from your descriptions. So will the development on these sites all be reasonably difficult to see?
So my 47 and my evidence in chief was talking about areas in relation to the rural visitor zone submission rather than the Gibston industrial zone. And areas two, and the areas shown on that particular map or plan that was appended as sheet 23 of my graphic attachment shows areas 1 to 4 that are different to the areas 1, 2, and 3 of the proposed Gibston industrial zone.
Thank you for that clarification. Yes, I've just turned up that. But going back to the test, reasonably difficult to see. Taking first those RV zones, will they be reasonably difficult to see?
Areas 3 and 4, when one turns to the viewpoints from the State Highway 6 on that stretch of road, you can see them. You see them for a short period of time travelling that length of road. I think the strait is around about 800 metres in length, and travelling about 100 kilometres per hour, you cover that relatively quickly. In comparison, Area 2 on Sheet 23, that half of Area 2 is what is shown as Area 1 on the structure plan for the Gibston Industrial Zone, or the proposed GIZ zone. Just for reference back to that.
And applying the same test, reasonably difficult to see. What's your view? Applying it to the numbering as per the structure plan, i.e. the GIS numbering?
Yes. Yeah, I believe it will be reasonably difficult to see when you take into consideration the proposed mitigation. The proposed mitigation strips. And I suppose if I can just fill that gap there, in putting those overlays on the viewpoints from that stretch of the highway, hopefully they have been somewhat useful. However, at that distance and when you view it from that, as I say, at that scale and from that distance, on hard to depict lines on the ground as compared to three-dimensional built form. But perhaps for reference, the front edge of the Area 1.
Which one? Because you've got two of them. Which
area? I'm referring to the views of the south part of the site.
Yep.
So that State Highway 6, when one's travelling west from the Kingsgate. That Area 1, the front edge of that Area 1 sits around about 130-odd metres beyond the road or the line of vegetation you can see to the front, which is the Nevis Bungee Road. And that part of the site is relatively flat. There is a slight grade up, and the proposed 20-metre-wide mitigation strip to the front of Area 1, that planting is growing at very similar level to that, to the contour of the land of Area 1, or would be growing from that similar level.
And I know you've told me this. What height are those viewpoints taken above the ground, above the roadway?
So they were taken from a standing position, so 1.5 metres. So my eye level above the highway. I think when one's in a relatively standard vehicle, which I'm not sure what a standard vehicle is these days, but let's just call it a regular sedan or wagon car, your eye level is about 1.2 above the road. Obviously, you'd be higher up in a bus or truck or van. There are three images there. The second one was an image provided by Mr. Jones, which is a Google Street View image. I had taken a series of photographs, but I hadn't taken one from that particular point. But in discussing with Mr. Jones, I agreed to include that view as well.
Thank you for liaising with him, as I requested. Appreciate that. Commissioner
Stolman. Well, thanks, Mr. Milne. I'm going to focus questions on how you distinguish urban development from rural development.
Yes, indeed.
I'll start with the discussion you had with the Chair on Area 3, which is the easiest target to look at. If I think of a zone providing 80% building coverage and 10 metres height. And I think of all of the urban environments across the country, putting aside the major city and urban centres, that's taller and denser than almost everything in the country, that tends to be less than 8 metres height and something less than 40% site coverage. I have to say I'm really nowhere near persuaded so far, at least on Area 3, that there's a ruralness about that simply because it's greens and greys and browns. It can't be that simple, can it? What am I missing?
I'm not sure if you're missing anything there, Commissioner Munro. I suppose I've taken, and look, 80% site coverage. When you consider the type of development that might occur in an industrial zone, and I've been involved over the years in a number of industrial zones or getting consent for activities that would happen in an industrial zone, there, and given that site coverage, that's still in reality what occurs or tends to occur on site is quite a lot of open space, because you have a lot of yard space, or you can have a lot of yard space associated with such activity. So while yes, the 80% site coverage, when you look at it by itself, you go, it is very urban and very dense, I would agree, but I think in reality, as you see these sites develop, it is far less. But notwithstanding that, I've taken my view as the zone as a whole within its setting, so just not one particular activity area by itself.
When I read through your evidence, I got the sense that your evaluation of its character was predominantly based on your assessment of views at the site from outside the site. Is that fair?
Yeah, look, certainly there is. I do mention, and I can't recall the exact paragraph, but I do talk about internal amenity and internal view. But yes, you did right. The priority, or the majority of my discussion, has been external views.
Because when I look at the definition of urban development in the plan, I don't see that it limits itself to what it looks like from the outside. And so I'm keen to get your thoughts on, if the zone was built out and I went and visited it, would I feel it was an urban development or still think it's a rural one?
Look, I'm relatively comfortable, Commissioner, that if you traverse the complete zone and you spent time in that zone and it was fully realised, and in that setting, I believe you would have, I think, and I've called it in my summary of evidence, a rural industrial character. So yes, there is a mix of urban form with rural character and rural form.
Would you not reach the same conclusion if I wandered around Albert Town? For the same reasons?
Albert Town being the residential...
Yep. A large area of land with bits of built form and bits of open space and bits of landscape?
Look, certainly that I think the extent of Albert Town I don't know the exact coverage of Albert Town, but you end up with a lot more, I believe, motifs of urban form in a residential setting than you would do in an industrial zone.
When I've thought of rural industry, I have to say in my own mind, I've thought of something like a dairy factory by itself that operationally needs to be in that part of the world, or a sawmill. I've never thought of, and I'm not saying this term unkindly, something closer to an industrial park where I think what's envisaged could be dozens of separate industrial uses together in one larger development. Are you familiar? Can you give me any examples of rural industrial developments that rather than being based on a single operation that needs to be in the rural environment, simply a cluster of industrial type development together?
No, I can't off the top of my head, Commissioner. Like you, I'm familiar and have worked on a number of dairy factories in rural settings. I've also worked with dairy factories in urban or town settings as well.
Yeah.
We have worked on a number of, I suppose, transport holding yards and sort of landscape supply yards in peri-urban or in rural environments, but they, beyond one or two being located together, I, off the top of my head, I can't give you an exact example of a rural business park, or rural industrial park, I should say.
Were you involved in identifying the proposed site coverage limits for the three areas?
Yes, there were suggestions or discussions I had with Mr. Giddens.
When we spoke to Mr. Edwards this morning on traffic matters, he talked about how his assessment of likely development was premised on. He told me it was a comparable based on Glenda Drive, which he told us was about 28% site coverage, and he gave us similar comments to what you've given us in terms of the likeliness of open spaces and yard spaces and parking spaces and so on. And I'm trying to understand why, if you think that something much lower than 80% is likely, why are you recommending 80% building coverage? Bear in mind, this is not the council nominating a generic standard for everyone. This is a submitter putting forward, presumably, something it intends to develop. So if 80% doesn't represent what's going to happen, what's it doing in the provisions we've got?
Look, a good question, and perhaps one that, and while I said I have discussed provisions with Mr. Ginns, perhaps one that he can answer from a planning point of view, from my landscape and visual point of view. It provides the upper end of a balance across the site of a range of densities.
If you had not been retained by your client to help figure out this proposal, let's say it had been done by someone else, and you had received it and been asked to provide a peer review of it, and it had instead been presented as an urban development, would you disagree with that?
I don't think I would, actually, because
What I'm really teasing out there is this something that is a home-run rural character all day long, or is it closer to that grey area where it could go either way?
I see where you're coming from. I think it's a fine balance. I totally agree with you, I don't think it's a home run all the way. I think it's a balanced approach to the site development. And I believe landscape and visual matters have been taken into consideration in the development of that, and that's why you see that, the network or the framework of elements existing waterways and low-lying areas being set aside. So I think it's a considered response. Certainly, I don't think it's a home run, but I think it's a fine balance of elements on the site.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Milne. I've got nothing else for you. Appreciate your time.
Mr. McLeod.
Commissioner.
To be honest, I think that's traversed all the issues that I had with
Mr. Hill.
Thank you. Mr. Milne, just in your, I suppose it's following a theme in a sense, in your conclusion, you say, I am some concerns surrounding a generic GIZ zone that allows a higher development potential in the design controls, and this is different. Is the difference the setbacks and the additional RDA criteria? In the GA zone, buildings are a restricted discretionary activity. But are you saying this is not a generic GIZ because of those additional control measures?
Exactly, yes, and some lower height controls as well.
So just in terms of the height controls, so the way that, as I understand it, looking at your visual and the one from, say, Highway 6, where when you were driving towards side, and there is area 1, 2, and 3, and there's a 6 and a 7 and up to a 10 and up to 12. Would they, if that was built to that, would that just simply read as one, it wouldn't be differentiated between the different heights between 1, 2, and 3, it would just read as a bigger building?
Sorry, sir, can you just repeat that? You're just breaking up slightly. I apologise.
You talk about the different height controls in areas 1, 2, and 3. When I look at those on the structure plan,
Yes.
Area 1 is the one closest to the view, 6 metres. Beyond, behind that is 2 and 7. I think beyond that is 10. And up to 12, actually.
Yeah.
My question is, would somebody driving along actually be able to differentiate those heights, or would it all just appear as a large, massive building, notwithstanding it might be
yeah.
ground or something else?
Yeah, for sure. I certainly don't think it would appear as a large, massive building, given the site coverages for areas 1 and 2. But you're right. In terms of height, it would be difficult to see from the highway. And also, given that the further away the activity area 3, that actually has the higher building, I think, in, from a perception point of view, it would be over that distance, because considering that when you look from the highway, you're around about 600 odd metres to the front of that activity area 1, and you're probably around about 1k to activity area 3. Perhaps of reference, just in terms of height, if we can just to relative to something on height, those pylons that you can see in the photos and those pylons that cross the site, are approximately 60 metres in height. And it's tough to see those without actually zooming in on a photo. But,
thank you.
So I think...
The final question I've got is, again, just going back to height. And if I recall correctly, in the notified GIZ zone, buildings less over 10 metres are a non-compliant activity. In this case, you'll find, or Mr. Gibbs is suggesting up to 12 metres in areas 2 and 3. Is that additional 2 metres? I mean, and we're talking about the scope there, we'll put that aside for a moment. And as for 12 metres for towers, I'm not sure what a tower is, but I think I know what a tower is, but I'm not quite sure what it means in this context. Does that additional 2 metres make any difference to you from a landscape perspective in this, how visible it is, or if it's reasonably difficult to see?
I think the difference between a 12 and a 10 and 12 and 7 of those zones from that distance, and if they're sort of, I suppose, tower structures rather than you know, building structures, no is my answer to that.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, thank you. Just two questions. The first is, when you did those visual simulations, have you mapped just the surface of the zone, i.e. the ground level, or have you mapped a potential building form in terms of height?
Yes, on the additional graphic exhibit that was filed with the hearings panel yesterday on sheet 8, we have existing a zone of theoretical visibility composite analysis for existing ground level. And then sheet 9 and sheet 10, so sheet 9 is 6 metres respectively, and sheet 10 sheet 9 is 6 metres and sheet 10 is 10 metres. So
thanks.
6 and a 10 one.
Thank you for pointing that out. And just the other question that follows on from Commissioner Munro's question is that if we're to compare this to Glenda Drive, which we're told is something like 28% site coverage, does limiting Area 1 to 20% site coverage really actually provide any meaningful mitigation?
Yes, I believe it does, and particularly when you combine that with the mitigation strips running through, and also when you think about the receiving environment as well.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Commissioner Dawson?
No more questions for me, thanks.
Oh, thank you. Stephen?
Thank you very much.
That seemed to be a bit...
Can I ask one more?
One more.
Thank you. Oh, yep. Mr. Bill, Zena Munro again. Just been reflecting more on that Glenda Drive comparison. One of the things that when I think of visiting Glenda Drive, putting aside the abstracts of site coverage and building height and internal use and stuff, is you see an awful lot of signage. And that's something I also associate with a more urban type environment rather than a rural one. You might disagree, and you can answer that when I finish. But when I just browse through these provisions again, I don't see anything that helps me understand how any signage might contribute to the ruralness that's been claimed. Can you just comment on that?
Oh, you're dead right, and perhaps that is something that needs to be considered further, is signage, and I agree with you totally, Glenda. When you do go down Glenda Drive, there is a lot of signage. There's also a lot of activity on Glenda Drive in terms of a lot of small businesses. And I think those small businesses you find would probably locate closer, and Commissioner Munro, you might have a better idea than me, but closer to town centres or urban centres, as compared to the type of industrial activity that you might find locating out here.
Okay, look, thank you for that additional answer. This time I promise there's nothing else from me.
That's absolutely fine, Commissioner.
And on that note, we bid you farewell, Mr. Milne. So thank you for the additional graphics. Thank you also for the additional sheet that you provided, viewed from the Crown Range Road looking down at Gibson Valley Station. You obviously had a busy afternoon.
It was. It's a most pleasant night.
So we'll bid you farewell and bid Ms. Stephen farewell.
Yes, thank you very much.
And we'll hear from you next week, no doubt.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Just a brutal thing. What is the Google photo? Had your pylons up. If you look at this, sorry, this one here is a better reference. Pylons. Google photo.
Bush Creek. Mr. Leakey,
yes.
Your moment of glory.
Right.
Well, at least for today.
Thank you, Commissioner or Chair Robertson, and also thank you for the flexibility to the council for moving me to the last slot of yours for the day to enable me to do some environment court mediation this morning in Queenstown. I've got Mr. Edmonds to my left, and Mr. Edmonds has prepared a summary statement which has just been circulated now. That he will talk to, and that the evidence to support the Bush Creek properties and investments case has been filed by Ms. Mahone, Ms. Edmonds, Mr. Edmonds' colleague, And Mr. Edmonds is adopting that evidence, as she unfortunately can't be here today. Hopefully you have my legal submissions also that have been pre-circulated.
We do indeed.
As well. And as I tend to do, I just propose to move through those relatively quickly and take any questions. Just to make sure, we filed a bundle of provisions at the back of the legal submissions as well, which we can talk to as we go. So let's move to my legal submissions and orientate the Bush Creek entities case. So at page 2 and 3, there's shows the area of land proposed to be zoned general industrial in Bush Creek in Arrowtown. And with we've put a hatched dot around the outside of the two entities that I act for, and Mr. Evans is giving evidence for Bush Creek Properties, the first, and Bush Creek Investments, the second, which I'll just refer to as the Bush Creek entities. And our case is in opposition of the general industrial zoning of these sites in this area, instead preferring and seeking a rezoning to business mixed use. In the original submission, there was alternative relief involving modifications to the general industrial provisions, but our relief has been refined in that we now are considered more appropriate as the rezoning to business mixed use. We submit that the sites in the surrounding neighbourhood are not suitable for general industrial because the area is too small for general industrial and is poorly located in terms of immediately surrounding residential development and access, and that business mixed use is more appropriate. As I've mentioned, we have evidence now from Mr. Edmonds, and we can move to that shortly. So I've provided from paragraph 15 a high-level summary of the amended business mixed use provisions sought by the submitters, and at paragraph 18 I've provided a summary of that, seeking, and these amendments also seek to enable the expansion and alteration of existing industrial activities through a Bush Creek specific relief that's been added to those provisions. And then we've also sought amendments to provide for the activities listed in A as an RD activity, a reduction in the permitted height, but adding an RD height control, and then anything over 10 metres in height being non-complying. We've also proposed a continuous building length control. And in my submission at paragraph 19, we submit that this zoning as an alternative to industrial would enable a greater mix of symbiotic activities, and I'd add there as demonstrated by the activities already there, and bring the business mixed use as notified zone more into line with the national planning standards, which describe business mixed use as areas used predominantly for a compatible mixture of residential, commercial, light industrial, recreation or community activities. Over the page, I've summarised from paragraph 25 the council position, and I don't probably need to go through that, conscious of time. Likewise, I've gone through the NPS 2020 and the implications of that on this case. And in my submission to tie off the NPS comment, the business mixed use would better implement the NPS than the general industrial zone. And I certainly won't be reading them out, but I've just extracted what I see as the key provisions from the NPS over the page. On page 10, I've provided a high-level summary of the current Bush Creek environment, and why, in a Section 32 sense, the environment's more appropriately zoned business mixed use and for the provision of the expansion of the existing industrial activity. Both the council and Ms. Mahone agreed that the environment is a mix of service and light industrial with some commercial, but they disagree as to the general character that this creates. The evidence for the submitters considers this creates a mixed character with a predominantly service use, while Mr. Place for the council considers it to be overall industrial in character. And that's the key different evidential difference between the submitters and the council. Over the page, I've summarised the Section 32 analysis, providing at paragraph 45 what I submit are the problematic implications of general industrial in relation to this zone. Likewise, at paragraph 46 and 47, I've gone on to summarise why in a Section 32 sense the business mix use is more appropriate. Take questions on those at the end. I think relevant to the Section 32 analysis, just from paragraph 48, are the prohibited activity statuses under the general industrial zone that would apply to this land if it was zoned general industrial, particularly the office, retail and commercial, if they were not ancillary to an industrial service, and also residential activities. And the evidence for the submitters has addressed a number of issues arising from that prohibited activity status. And I've summarised those at paragraph 50 of my legal submissions. I've also got a section from paragraph 53 regarding the economic effects and demand, and I don't propose to read that out. The case for the submitters is that this land this isn't suitable to provide the demand for industrial activities and that there are other places more appropriate to do that. That's also covered off in the evidence. I'd just like to touch on the reverse sensitivity point. And the general industrial provisions include quite significant setback requirements in relation to the residential boundaries of the Bush Creek land. And in my submission, it's another reason why general industrial doesn't fit in this environment. To have those setbacks necessary further makes them a non-attractive site for an industrial activity. And the fact they're needed to manage reverse sensitivity in my submission shows or demonstrates the inappropriateness of the activity for that land. And that's a 7 metre setback, which is a considerable setback for the size of these sites, particularly the long, thin ones down the bottom. So in conclusion in our submission, that the notified zoning in a Section 32 sense is not the most appropriate means to achieve the purpose of the RMA, and it cannot be on the basis, realistic and factually based assessment of the current, or equally as importantly, and more importantly in fact, the future environment that my clients anticipate for this area. It's currently already mixed use, predominantly service with some light industrial, commercial and residential, and Mr. Edmonds has some helpful analysis around that in his summary statement. And the future outlook in my submission is similar, given that the land is not suited to heavy industrial and its location around residential and also in O&L. The Bush Creek entities have recognised that provision for the continuation of that existing industrial, which I describe as light, may be beneficial, so we've proposed some provisions to ensure that that is achieved. And the business mixed use and amendments will enable activities better suited to the environment than prohibiting them, which is what the general industrial provisions would not achieve, but cause. So I appreciate we moved through that at relative speed, but hopefully it sets the scene. The remainder of my submissions are the provisions, which are probably best addressed with Mr. Edmonds and myself once Mr. Edmonds has presented his summary. But I can take any questions before that.
Thank you, Mr. Leahy. I do have one or two points to discuss with you. The first relates to your paragraph 20 discussing Bunnings.
Yes.
I refreshed my memory going back to read Bunnings as a result of having read your submissions, and it seemed to me that where Judge Jackson was talking about that potential not being underestimated, that was in the context of estimates of nil. Mm. So saying it shouldn't be nil doesn't actually tell us a lot about what it should be.
Yeah, and there should be something.
Should be something.
Is what he's saying. But he hasn't.
Might not be a lot.
Yeah, he hasn't set the. Judge Jackson has acknowledged the benefits of that, but hasn't given us a level or a bar. The other, unrelated to your question, but on Bunnings, the other point from the decision, which is quite helpful in my submission, is Judge Jackson looking beyond the territorial boundaries of Queenstown to find industrial land supply, and somewhat forward thinking of His Honour, given the MPS is now telling us to do that as well in the context, and I would submit here particularly relevant to the context of Cromwell and the industrial land available in Cromwell.
Now, I was going to ask you about that because we have a bit of a problem because we have no evidence as to what as to what Cromwell might produce, and we haven't had an economist tell us that in terms of the new definition of an urban environment, that Cromwell's on the same housing or labour market as Queenstown.
Mm.
So how far can we take His Honour's steer? Like, he had evidence before him, but we don't know what exactly that was because he described it generically. And even if he had described it, it still wouldn't be evidence that we could say, well, we had heard. So where does it take us?
And as often the case, I wish I could give you some evidence from the bar, because
resist that temptation, Mr. Lee.
I appreciate that. The Commissioner doesn't like me doing that.
Are you in a position where you could refer to us a ready-to-hand document that we might accept that describes?
Well, I did have a witness who was going to be able to personally give evidence on her own behalf regarding this matter, because the MPS talks about the labour market, look to the labour market. I'd have to double check back. I think it refers to the residential market.
Housing and labour.
So Hayley, who had prepared the evidence, lives in Cromwell and works in Queenstown. Well, I think that's case in point. Doesn't answer your question in terms of my ability to provide that as evidence. So completely agree. But in my submission, the MPS directs that. I think in a real-world assessment, that's what's happening in this district. But that's as far as we can take it. There's no evidence from these submitters in relation to that, other than a helpful comment from the Environment Court that in that context they considered it was one market. I think Judge Jackson referred to ward boundaries, which was quite a old-fashioned term in my submission, but I think he was saying the same thing.
Yes, well, that could have meant looking over the hill to Wanaka, but he was looking at Cromwell.
To Cromwell.
Because that was the Bunnings consent.
Yes.
Now, looking at paragraph 35, your discussion of the NPSUD, firstly, I think it might be 320.2.
Sorry, yes. Mm.
I was very puzzled for a little while.
I'm sorry to have you lost in
here. But more substantively, as I read it, that's in the context of the HBA estimating what's required to meet the demand rather than a general test. Is that wrong?
No, you're right that's about the capacity. In my submission, I agree with you, that's about the capacity assessment that the MPS directs the council to undertake. And that in determining capacity, you need to look at what the land can actually be used for, and will it be used for that. But it's not, if what you're asking is does it apply to that objective and policy part of the MPS, then no, it's in relation to that capacity study, which will need to come in due course from the council.
And
at that time, of course, it would be following through with my submission at 35, it would be the argument of the submitters that this land wouldn't be suitable for inclusion within that due to those points, location and size. But that would be for that time.
And lastly, I think that a lot of, like Mr. Edmonds will speak to this, characterisation of, well, is this an industrial area at all? And the chapter is about industry, providing for industry and service activities.
Mm.
It would appear to be clearly be a service centre.
Yes. And that's a similar conversation that Mr. Edmonds and I have had out in the foyer just before the hearing, that there's a service theme. The base contracting yard in particular, which is at the very end of Bush Creek Road, is a large portion of this land, which I'll describe as a service activity. Further back, though, that's when the more eclectic mix of activities kicks in, brewery, retail. So there is that mix, but the service type activities take up more room. So on land area would be a higher proportion. Agree with that. But I think in terms of activity type, it is a genuine mix.
And while it's always dangerous to form views on site visits, we drove into 11 Bush Creek Road, and we didn't have the categorisation.
Mm.
And I'll discuss with Mr. Edmonds what exactly is a service activity, but it feels industrial.
Mm.
And so in terms of character, we've just finished discussing what is urban, what is industrial character. In terms of character, is there a meaningful discussion to be, a distinction to be made between light industry and service activities?
Potentially, well, to break that up to answer the question, I think between light industry and service you get closer. The challenge with the PDP is it doesn't define light industry. So it lumps is a horrific word, categorises industry as one activity. Well, there's quite two different ends of a spectrum of industrial activity. To use a PDP definition, which I don't like, I think industrial and service are very different. Service being more yard-based, storage, that kind of thing. Industrial, more manufacturing, fabricating. But light industrial, which I think is a fairer description potentially of some of these activities, is closer to service. It also occurs to me that light industrial is potentially more an internalised industrial activity than a heavy industry type activity that has more effects that go beyond the site. I think that's a potential difference between the sorts of activities that light industrial could be classified as and heavy industrial at the other end of that spectrum.
And like the council evidence was clearly that there is somewhere between very little and no heavy industry in the district and not likely to be. And as I read your paragraph 52, your clients are saying there's no demand for conversion to heavy industry.
Mm.
So are comparisons with heavy industry just like a straw man or a straw person? That yes, in theory, but not real.
I think that for this location, there's certainly no demand due to the matrix of matters, the size of the site, the location within Arrowtown, size of the sites. Sorry, I can't really answer the question in terms of the wider demand for heavy industry within the district. But if there is that demand, I consider it would be much more likely to want or would need to go to a more greenfields industrial location than an industrial location like this, surrounded by residential, with relatively small lot sizes.
Commissioner Munro.
Just one question, thank you. The discussion we had with the council officers regarding the prohibited activity status proposed in the GIZ, where it applies to land that's currently being used for activities that would henceforth become prohibited. One of the things that was discussed was whether the council anticipated over time those activities to go away because they're becoming prohibited. And what I took from the staff response was that they weren't intended to be stopped or discouraged or sent away. They'd bubble away on the basis of an existing use right. It's been put to us by a number of people that that's just bad planning, and we'll deal with that. I'm interested in your thoughts legally, whether you think it's correct or incorrect, or appropriate or inappropriate, to use a zone and a prohibited activity status on activities that already exist that the council does not seek to stop. As a matter of principle, so take away the specifics of this GIZ, just as a matter of law, is that how prohibited activity status should be used?
As a matter of law, my submission is that it's not how a prohibited activity status should be used. And I'd refer back to some submissions I've made to a similarly formed panel 2 weeks ago around the relevance of that existing and consented activity baseline to rezoning decision making. And that is of relevance. And in that sense, I don't think those existing activities should, in a legal sense, just be ignored and expected to slowly drop away through a prohibited activity status. I think that's missing an important part of your assessment under Section 32 as to the most appropriate zone. Because in my submission, that misses a pretty important component to that, which are those existing activities. I'd add to that, it's, in my submission, not an efficient planning outcome or an RMA outcome to prevent what may be, on the effects basis, a very appropriate expansion of those existing activities, which would be impossible under a prohibited activity status.
Commissioner Munro asked you whether there was any legal impediment. I would characterise your answer as going to the planning merits. I'm also conscious that you've given us a submission on Coromandel Watchdog, which is, of course, the leading authority on prohibited activities, where the one thing that's absolutely clear is that the Court of Appeal declined to put hard legal rules around when it was or wasn't appropriate to impose a prohibited activity. So what's the answer to the Commissioner's question? Is there a legal impediment?
I've been landed into that question.
You picked the wrong afternoon.
I did, didn't I? Well, I don't. I think it is an incorrect legal approach to use a prohibited activity status to stop something happening on the basis you don't know what that activity might or might not look like in the future, based on the Coromandel Watchdog decision. So I do think that that isn't an appropriate legal approach. And that there is that bar, if you like, from Coromandel Watchdog. But I think I'd put significant weight on the Section 32 aspect to my answer, but I think hopefully that's helped.
Thank you.
Sorry for being
sorry.
A little over the top. It's been a hard day.
That's fine. Happy to help.
Commissioner Dawson? Mr. Smith.
Small one, and it's just to do with you described the Bush Creek entities. What happens to the remainder? If you're basing your argument, what happens to the remainder of the zone? Is that?
Yep. No, good question. So I act for the Bush Creek entities, but there's, in my submission, nice clear scope from other submissions for you to, that the zoning of this entire, the Bush Creek neighbourhood is on the table. There's scope to amend the entire zoning, and that is the most appropriate relief in our submission. So it would be to amend this entire zone not just, I think that an outcome amending the zoning of my clients would not be an appropriate planning outcome, a very spot-zoned approach. It's already a dangerously spot-zoned situation to make it any smaller.
So given that answer, and if you look across the road from your entities, there's a... and I stood on site and tried to reconcile in my own head why you had that little triangle and another triangle of a property, which is the northeastern triangle across the road.
The Thomas property.
Yeah, the Thomas. Yep. Yeah. So I don't act for them.
I do.
Oh, Mr. Edmonds is giving evidence.
So Mr. Evidence, in a legal position.
Mr. Evidence.
Mr. Evidence. Did they call Mr. Evidence?
Don't call Mr. Edmonds Mr. Evidence.
Mr. Edmonds. I'll leave that question for him there in that case. That was all.
From a league, just to have a go though in terms of legal scope, I do think you'd have scope to address that triangled property over the road as well, due to some a broad submission on that.
And now we'll have Mr. Evidence.
Sure. I've circulated a brief summary, but it looks and sounds very similar to what Mr. Leckie's been talking to you about. I'm not sure if it's necessary for me to reread it, given it's late in the day.
Do you want to, maybe, and I agree gratefully with that, but in terms of your photo where you've gone around the world, as it were,
yes.
Maybe that's worth just dwelling on. In particular, Chair asked a question before about that number 11 and that landscape supplier, looks industrial, what is it exactly? That might be worth a couple of minutes.
Sure, okay. Well, so that image does capture the zone. And as you've obviously all done a site visit, so you know it reasonably well. And you've got the storage yard, the storage building. You turn up on the left. You turn up Bush Creek Road, off Mance Road. And then on your left, you've got a succession of small multi-unit, you know, butcher, bike, baker, whatever, all those kind of things. Mm. The big one is number 11 Bush Creek Road, which is shown as number 5. And that is base contracting, and then there's a whole lot of historical storage and people leaving boats and old cars and landscape supplies, and it's those two blocks. So it's the one with the number 5 on it, but it's also the one to the left of that, and then further to the left again, which is number 31, I think, is actually the Arrow Irrigation Race Company's sheds. So the main land holding that we're talking about in this zone is effectively known as base contracting. Been there for at least 20 years. A couple of contractors have been in there. I think there's another smaller contractor that has an area in there. So very much service activity. When we look at the definitions of industrial service, it's wholly within the service category. In fact, I think, as Commissioner Robinson pointed out, and you can see from that list that we've appended there, there's a really strong flavour of service activity happening in that area, along with a bit of commercial and retail and residential. No obvious industrial, which we look to the plan to help us there. It's that fabricating, that value add process is not really happening out there at all. The brewery is possibly the only industrial activity that's sitting in there, and it's only been in there for about a year. It kind of crosses. I mean, it's a very clean industrial activity in that it's wholly inside, and if it's
there's nothing in the definition of industrial activities that says it has to be heavy or dirty or outside.
No.
It just says processing, isn't that what brewing is?
Yeah, there's, I guess that's a component of the activity there. There's also some retail, there's some admin, and it's a, yeah, okay. It probably is an industrial activity. That's the one that is the split zone site, the triangle. That Mr. Thomas, I think, has already appeared before you. Is he?
No.
You haven't heard from Mr. Thomas?
No.
Okay. I thought he was going to come over. Sorry, just to help Councillor Clare.
If you could give me some admins on your Mr. Evidence, that would be great.
I'll give you some admins. Mr. Thomas made a submission asking for his zoning to be expanded over that little bit of rural in the back corner.
We stood on the front corner trying to figure out where the zone boundary actually were. It seems to go really close to the corner of his house, if not through the house.
If not through, yes. I'm not quite sure either, but it's one or both. So he made his submission. I should declare he's a personal friend of mine as well. I told him about this rezoning process. I said, look, I'll put a submission in for you as well, picking up on the points that other submitters here have raised. So the...
How does Andy Erskine Construction become a commercial activity? Is he offering stuff for sale or hire?
No, he is...
That's the definition of commercial activity.
He's running... Well, it's part of it. He's running... Basically, his business operates from there, but he's obviously building on other sites. He's not retailing from there at all.
Not hiring or retailing?
It's basically
people are posting their checks to get address.
Anyway. Just an office.
Fundamentally an office. It's probably more of a service activity actually.
That's what I would have thought.
I have to confess.
It's just like
So there's grey edges to all these definitions, because
right.
the head office of where Lane Neave accepts its invoices and gets paid is a commercial activity, presumably, and I'd argue that a builder's in a similar situation, but then there's different things happen at a builder's head office. And lawyers.
Yes, I was interested in somewhat question 3B, Arrowtown Engineering.
Arrowtown Engineering is... I know the guy.
Are they consultant engineers rather than...
So he's
doing... So it's an
actually
office.
He's...
Professional office.
Yeah, he is doing a bit of fabricating. He does most of his work is off-site, so he'll come to your house and build you a special wrought iron fence or something. Occasionally he'll make something there and bring it to your house, but a lot of the work is done on your property. He'll build you a chimney or something like that. That's what he's doing.
Thank you. So looking at figure 5 on Ms. Mahon's evidence, 27, looks like that's the same triangle that carves its way through the Thomas land, like it's a holdover from the operative plan?
Yes, figure 5.
Figure 5 or figure 6?
I think it's 5.
Yeah, it pops up on the aerial photo on figure 4 as well.
So it is a holdover. Now, wanted to ask you about the interpretation of RPS for policy 5033. So it's over the previous. I was reading. Want to talk about paragraph 40, but the actual policy is the previous page. What it says as modified is manage land available for industrial activities by, among other things, restricting the establishment of activities in industrial areas that are likely to result in reverse sensitivity effects or inefficient use. And Ms. Mann saying her interpretation is, in other words, activities can be established in industrial areas if those things are not present. And further on, she has another description. Paragraph 61, 533 requires you to prove whether non-industrial activities will actually have reverse sensitivity effects. And I wondered whether that was all a bit overstated, and the only thing you can say is that the RPS precludes matters in those categories and leaves anything else at large. We'll put it another way, doesn't preclude it, doesn't support it, doesn't say anything about it.
You're mainly referring to C, right? 533C.
Yes. Because Ms. Mann's evidence builds a case, and the adjectives seem to get more expressive the further away she gets from the discussion of what the words say. So I'm giving you an opportunity to tell me why that her reasoning is entirely correct and I should rely on it.
Well, certainly, I mean, I look at that clause as clearly telling the council, when it's looking at where it's going to place its industrial zones, that it does so in positions where... I've got hearing aids that pick up Bluetooth. I start getting calls without wanting them. Sorry about that. Certainly with... this clause I see it as being a clear direction from the regional council to the district council, saying when you're creating these industrial areas, don't put them in locations where they will have reverse sensitivity effects or they're inefficiently located. So I think if Ms. Mann has strayed from and started to embellish, I think it would only be marginally. I'd agree with her interpretation that this area would be one of those areas that the regional council is directing industrial activity away from.
Well, what this is saying is this is restricting activities that are likely to result in reverse sensitivity effects on industrial activities. It's restricting non-industry. Missing something.
Restricting the establishment of activities in industrial areas that are likely to result in reverse sensitivity effects.
So the classic definition of reverse sensitivity effects is vulnerability of sensitive activities to the activity to the effects of others already typically established. as I read this, this is the classic reverse sensitivity. Don't establish things that will create reverse sensitivity effects in your industrial areas.
Right, okay. I guess we may be looking at it from different perspectives. I'm looking at more from the perspective of the surrounding land activities as well as some of the established residential activities that are sitting inside that zone. Tell me if I'm incorrect, Commissioner, but you may be looking at it more from a perspective of other service activities within the zone being compromised.
Yes. And maybe you're right. Maybe I'm looking at it for what I expect to see in a reverse sensitivity policy.
Right. I've read that policy from the Regional Council and my interpretation has been that it's more of a zoning patterning policy of making sure that those industrial zones sit in the context of other existing and future land uses. I think that because by the time you get to the implementation of that policy, is almost, I'll try and articulate this properly, the zoning is almost complete. It's the RPS dropping down to region to district councils is trying to set the pattern of how land is used. In part, I think by the time if you came to this policy and said, well, you know, that activity is no longer appropriate in there, I think once you've established the zoning pattern, it's almost too late to. Maybe I'm just saying this is. I see this as a higher level policy about zoning patterning.
I think it's certainly that. And the other question, Ms. Mann is attempting to persuade us to amend strategic policy 338, and the ink is barely dry on the Environment Court's consent order.
I can potentially jump in there if that
might
helps.
Be a good idea.
That is what Ms. Mahan was that is her evidential position, and that is based on the and/or relief that was initially sought in the submission of either business mix use or amendments to the general industrial zone. As I mentioned in my legal submissions, the relief being pursued is more appropriate as the business mix use. One of a few benefits of focusing on that relief is that the policy level barriers potentially that existed requiring that amendment no longer exist because it would no longer be an industrial zone. So the evidence becomes a relative moot point if the zone becomes business mixed use, in my submission.
So why it's so popular?
In a broader sense, this issue of having an ability to amend provisions that have been determined by the Environment Court is one that is very difficult to grapple with, and I don't think the Environment Court has even grappled with it yet, because they've only had to make decisions. They're the first cab off the rank. They've made their decisions on topics one and two only. So.
Well, you'll understand that I thought it was very bold. However, Commissioner Hill.
Yeah, very, very much so.
Because of the residential component of
guess the one we were talking about earlier this afternoon is clearly a business zone, and is really the only business zone for Wanaka. Anderson Heights is changing, so that's actually quite a critical area. This one, and I keep on pointing to the screen behind Commissioner Robinson, is obviously of completely different nature, and you've already seen all the evidence about that it's not on a transport route, that it's surrounded on two sides by residential. So I see them as quite different propositions.
So the long is Mr. Lee pointed, what, looking at what is the long term future. So what do you see as the long term future? Is it business mixed use, or do you look at your clients? Is it a residential dominated or some other thing?
In this area?
Yes, in this area.
I actually think it's, I've talked to the landowners as well to try and understand what their vision is for the land. And I've always, and I live near Arrowtown, so I know this area quite well. I consider it would be quite appropriate to have an actual real business mixed use, so you do actually live and work in the same area. Small businesses, some of those small businesses that are already in there, whether it's the bike guy or the air conditioner guy, coexisting with residential units. I think also there's an opportunity to get some density in there for residential, which Arrowtown doesn't typically provide. And that's that is the highest density residential in all of Arrowtown, which adjoins it over the back there.
I think that was it's clear deliberate.
Very different, yeah. And the only thing that, when you look at the business mixed use zone, it talks about visitor accommodation. And in recent times, that has been jumped upon down Gorge Road, and everyone's proposing hotels. And I think that's actually undermining the purpose of the area, because it sanitises a lot of the block from other activities. I think in this context it would be quite appropriate to say visitor accommodation should be non-compliant and actually drive it towards more of a business or residential or combination.
Thank you very much.
Commissioner McLeod?
That's a similar discussion that we were having this morning, and it's one of the questions I had was, given the competition for affordable accommodation, isn't this, to use the chair's analogy, if it looks like a duck, it's a duck, isn't this just going to be, it'll default to the residential component? Aside from all the desires to have a bike mechanic and whatever, it does.
A bit of crystal ball gazing. But
absolutely crystal ball gazing. But I just wonder if, that's just that.
I think that can be, if there is an outcome that is more than just residential that is being pursued, you can certainly create a framework that delivers that or gives a higher chance of that being delivered. It's not uncommon along a lot of those business strips to ensure and require business activity on the ground floor, so that you don't end up with a residential,
The B Mars doesn't require that, does it?
A big part.
The business mixed use zone doesn't require that, does it?
Does along Gorge Road from memory?
Not.
I think it does, or if it.
Would you agree with it, something like that to help tilt the balance towards
I think you might be a bit more precise in just saying all ground floor must be business, because I think as you go further down Bush Creek Road into where the site widens out, you might end up with, and I could imagine, you could end up with a couple of apartment buildings. Apartment buildings might be overstating it, but...
Well, if you're looking at the height limit...
But townhouse type.
And you're looking at next to an O&L,
and
it wouldn't be maybe a cold, miserable place to live, but then there's a really
funny. Arizona General.
Exactly. But the and if you look at, for example, in Gordon Road, there's that development there that was, and that's been used as an example by both sides of the argument. And that was the whole thing: was you have a business below, you have a flat above, and maybe, you know, somewhere, and it's just defaulting towards residential. And we find ourselves in this discussion now about should it, shouldn't it? How do we get? How do we tweak? And I just wonder if we're going to find ourselves in 10 years' time in the same thing. And what is and the question in that whole statement is the industrial component, is the, because there's a tendency to discuss heavy industrial, but the JIS is actually looking at providing industry, providing business, providing, is that the bit that we're looking for in this area, or are we looking for the business, the bike repair, or are we looking for the residential?
I don't think, if you were doing industrial activity in this area, I think it would be of a very small scale that would almost definitely be indoors, because
if you look at the largest piece of dirt that you showed us in your analysis, and when I looked at it, you wouldn't drive a car in it, you wouldn't get out. Which is number five.
You might call it service, but it's definitely not what you'd expect in a fully fledged business mixed use zone.
The base contracting site.
Is it?
Yeah, that site has been, number five on that image, which extends across, has become, I think you did a site visit there, it's become a bit of a wasteland where people have just come.
Well, it does look like an industrial zone if you accept that the industrial zones can be 100% service. Because it's that they might be called industrial zones, but they are—it's clearly industrial and service. And when you look at the BMUS zone, I mean, it's got all sorts of stuff in here about the nature of the street frontages and the level of amenity and.
Where was that, Commissioner? Sorry. In which zone?
The business mixed use zone, in its future form, because we don't have any of it fully fledged yet, it doesn't look like that site that the Commissioner of Council referred to. Or any of Bush Creek.
Well, if you look at the business mixed use design guidelines.
Yeah, it's just like, like it's not even approaching what a business mixed use zone
with
is intended to be. That whole street, really. And but maybe that's what you're intending it to transition to.
And potentially, helpfully, and again, none of us can know what the future holds, but there is a lapsed resource consent for that site for eight retail, office space, eight apartments, on-site parking.
Yeah.
Quite a master planned development, which I think
which is sort of business
more
mixed
business
use.
Mixed use.
Yeah.
That was the one that was looking at upgrading the intersection.
I think so, and included maybe a small supermarket potentially.
As well. A supermarket,
And that's lapsed.
That's lapsed. It's quite old, 2006.
Yep. Yeah. 2006 is old. Oh my God. I don't want to. No, it's given the constraints of time, I'm good.
Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. You know, I was very interested to acknowledge your comment about the visitor accommodation. I do think the risk, and we've had a lot of conversations around this with business mixed use, but the risk of a large site like the one, the yard that's there being turned into a hotel or something, I don't think is really consistent, I suppose, with what we might envisage from an industrial or a service, business service related type zone. And I've expressed a few times that there sort of seems to be a gap, there's something in the middle, and you know, we promoting a mixed business use has those challenges because we can't might not be able to see past those visitor accommodation and residential uses. height's an interesting one in here too, in that the business mixed use zone, you know, is at least 12 metres, and obviously in Queenstown's even higher than that. I mean, do you see that 12 metres is necessary or desirable in this location?
No, we have suggested seven.
Oh, you've already promoted something.
And we're saying seven permitted, 7 to 10 RD, and then over 10.
We also have the unusual situation here in that we have a bespoke zone next door, the Meadow Park zone, that actually, having a look at it, it actually makes specific reference to the interface and the reverse sensitivity issues between the industrial area and the residential activities. In fact, there's a specific zone that is a buffer between there, but it's also some policy and some purpose around it. What relevance does that have to how we treat this site and the decision we make?
So that zone obviously came more recently, so that's trying to fit itself into and around the edges of that what was industrial zone was, and that's why you see that driveway and grassed area at the back of those units for that very purpose. The evidence is certainly we recognise the proximity of these units and the impacts that service or industrial activities can have on those, on the amenity of those properties. I've actually stayed in one of those units, and you are quite aware of the proximity of the activities over the fence and the incongruous nature. I think so the Meadow Park Zone will come up for review stage 4 maybe, so there would be the opportunity to integrate zones if needed.
I suppose the question is, can we rely on the provisions or whatever might come out of stage 4 to provide to manage the effects between this interface, or do we have to manage them internally either through the activity types or through the provisions that we put on it?
Sure. There's no build areas, which are now also dropped down onto titles and things like that within the Meadow Park area. So they're keeping back, and that is something that will endure beyond whatever the zone is.
So the provisions of the Meadow Park zone in terms of that buffer have been enacted in an enduring way, is what you're saying. Okay. Yeah, I suppose just going that final question we've discussed a few times is, and I'll start a little bit further back, saying, was there a problem with the industrial A zone being there in the first place, or did that cover what exists and what?
It's not exactly what's there. There's residential which sits there. There's some retail. I think there's activities that have probably popped up in there that don't have the approval of council. just popped up, I'd imagine. I can't tell you too much about the history of the zone, though. I'm sorry, I don't really know.
I was more interested in whether it's an expression of the industrial zone, A zone, and whether, you know, that discussion we had earlier on, is there actually something that fits between GIZ and BMU that actually is far more appropriate here.
I think the industrial A was simply just a one size fits all in the old district plan, and I don't think a lot of thought was given to whether it was appropriate in this area, because this was largely reasonably undeveloped. You know, there are basically a collection of old houses that have been converted to builders' yards and offices and things like that. I hear what you're saying, though, about whether there is something else apart from business mixed use that might be appropriate in this context.
I suppose what I'm thinking is that if we changing the mix business use zone to remove VA even and potentially other things runs into some sort of major policy issues when you've got a policy promoting something but a rule removing it or, or whatever it is. I'm just wondering how we best resolve that.
Well,
and that was going to be my question as well.
Yeah.
You know, what does your client actually, your clients actually want for this area? What do you think is the appropriate zoning for this area? So most of Ms. Mann's evidence is about the existing activities that are there that don't fit with GIZ. I mean, a lot of her evidence is based on that. I can see, you know, that they're predominantly service with a bit of commercial and office and some of the retail and some houses. But there's a huge leap from there to what is anticipated in a business mixed use zone, which could be all residential.
It could
and
be.
And a high level of amenity, street frontage, no industrial, no... So is that what you're really saying is appropriate for that site? Or are you really saying that a less, you know, something that's in between?
Well, I guess there's two parts to the answer. One is, what do the clients want? What do the landowners want with their land? And what have they told us about? And I can be quite frank with you, they haven't told us a lot. The larger landowner, which is the contracting yards, would certainly like to implement something along the lines of what they've had consent for in the past. So they have talked about a combination of small businesses that support Arrowtown that can't be in Arrowtown because there's a very, very small commercial area there. And they have looked over the fence and seen, you know, a lot of those small businesses pop up in those smaller buildings. So they certainly see some scope for that. And they've also said they'd like to do residential. And
was there some retail?
Yeah, but they don't see a long-term future for the contractors' yards that are there. They see that simply as a holding pattern until something else comes along.
And as a tangible area, we looked around to try and find that as an example, if there was, you know, a magic zone. And where we landed was the Frankton Marina precinct, which has its own complexities and has been rezoned business mixed use. But as a product, it works really well with now with food and beverage. It does have some VA, some what I'd say is light industrial, some retail. But that is zoned BMU. So.
But Commissioner Dawson, you were asking me what the other part of that answer was. What do I think, apart from what do the owners think? And when you do these submissions, obviously you're very conscious of the fact that you've got an existing framework that you're trying to fit yourself into. And Commissioner Smith said sometimes these things don't, you know, they're square pegs in round holes, especially if there's existing policies about VA, for example, which may not be appropriate. As a planner, if I were to go beyond simply the business mixed use as an overall framework, I think I'd probably look towards the business zone concept that we were talking about this afternoon, maybe for at least the front end, which would be either side of Bush Creek Road up until the contractor's yard. And then I know it's probably not the most hospitable environment, but then I would probably look at more of a townhouse residential, high density residential outcome for the contractor's yard itself, because that's an area where you could actually do something that's properly master planned and will probably have its own internal road network. And that's probably, it's a refinement of where Ms. Mann was going, but
then to she's now, I mean, she's taken the business mixed use zone, but then she thought, oh, this is not quite right either, so we've got to then industrialise it by adding an industry and taking out VA and bringing down the heights and all these other, so it's sort of like you can't, whichever way you go, you're pushing back the other way.
Yeah, and some land use is going to miss out. As a planner, I don't think that the service yard activity is a sustainable long-term use in that area.
Just on one minor point, that it may be a drafting error, but in terms of you've got the discretionary building height applied to Bush Creek Road, and it suggests, where appropriate, the integration of Horn Creek into the development and landscaping.
Well, that'd be tricky.
Yes, it's going to be hard.
Is there something I missed? Is there another Horn Creek?
No. There's a Bush Creek.
Bush Creek on Bush Creek Road? I'd hope.
There's no Horn Creek.
Yeah, no, I think it should be Bush Creek.
No.
Is that in the rule?
Where is it? It's
that's in the RD discretion. It's restricted to I. Well, that's the provisions you gave us to do.
Yep. Oh, I see. Horn. Yeah, no, that we've borrowed these provisions. Sorry, that.
That shouldn't. That's just simply not necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I presume that's a cut and paste.
Sorry, that's a cut.
That was. Yes. Not a very good cut and paste.
Any more commissioners?
No.
Any more for any more?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For the Bush Creek team. We'll adjourn proceedings after another exciting day. Back 9 a.m., same time, same channel.